What is up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of Guardians of the Future. I'm your host, Justin Latta. I know it's been a while. We haven't really done a podcast since spring training started. Kind of waiting for some news to come in and things to talk about. And I've been doing a lot of writing, obviously, for listening. I hope you've been checking out a lot of the prospect profiles I've been doing, a lot of the scouting reports. I had to take a little break from writing because I was in Arizona for spring training for the first time in my life. If you haven't seen, never had a chance to go before. Really exciting. Got to go down there and kind of be an observer slash, you know, kind of fan. My wife was down there with me, and my father-in-law has a timeshare vacation suite down there. So really, it was really awesome for them to take us down there and get a chance to look at things back there. Never been to the complex before. We got to see a lot in the backfields, a couple spring training games, a lot of practices. That was so cool. Highly recommend that if you have the money to do so. It is just such a great experience. And honestly, for me, I felt bad because we went at an awkward time. So we went down on Friday, the 29th. I'm sorry, we left on the Thursday, 29th. Got there Friday to go to our first game, and night game against the Dodgers. I will tell you, if you go to spring training and you go to the Dodgers Stadium, Camelback Ranch, first of all, fan-friendly stadium, really great. The complex is connected to the White Sox and Dodgers complexes are connected, and they are connected to the ballparks. So you can go in and watch practice on backfields, get autographs, watch players walk through, and then you can go to the game right after. It's all right there once you park. It is packed and it is expensive. Dodgers tickets are really expensive. That was crazy. We paid $55 for a lawn seat. Just unbelievable. But, you know, I watched Bobby Miller from the Dodgers pitcher play catch on a backfield, like right in front of a fence. Like it was a high school stadium field. It was so fantastic. The next day though, because it was a night game, Arizona time, 6 o'clock, the Guardians did not practice on the major league practice field on Saturday morning. We were hoping to go and get a glimpse of that. So no major leaguers there. And then Sunday, they never came out. We didn't go Sunday because, they had a travel game on Sunday, which we also went to in May, so they had a split squad game. So we never saw a major league practice. But what we did see, because I went to go over there, we walked all the way back to where the Guardians minor league fields are in the development complex, and it was like a couple fields you can get really good access to. A lot of people were telling me, you know, you can't really see anything. It's locked down. And yeah, all the center field and right field and left field walls are like tarped up, so they have like six fields. You can only see about one, two, three of them really, and a lot of the outfields are tarped up, so you can't see from there. But if you're on the third base line of all of them and the first base line, a little behind home plate around some of them, you can see some of it. So I was expecting the worst and got to see a lot. And we got to go to minor league practices and both days, Friday and Saturday. It was fantastic. Not as fun for my wife and my father-in-law, but I enjoyed it. My wife and father-in-law both said I was like a kid in the candy store going out there. I mean, I was watching guys just take infield grounders, take fly balls off of a machine. Guys just playing catch, doing calisthenics. I mean, it was great. It's all everything I wanted in spring training, honestly. And the games were just kind of a cherry on top of the trip and seeing some prospects in game action. So let's talk about real quickly some, I'll get to more observations from the backfield. So that's what you're all here to listen to, hopefully, is what I saw in the backfield is what I'm excited to talk about. But let's talk about the top prospects in camp so far. Obviously, Chase DeLauder, everyone knows, is having a fantastic camp. I saw Jeff Passan's piece on ESPN. I talked about this on Lockdown Guardians a little bit, so go listen to that for sure if you haven't. And talking about just how good he's playing, could he force his way on the open day roster? And I don't see it. That's not Cleveland's MO. They'd have a lot of roster spots right now that are kind of tied up between the money they're paying Laureano and Straw, and they don't have a 40-man spot to give. I think they still want to exhaust their options with Will Brennan, and there's still Rodriguez and Valera. Valera's hurt. I don't think it's unfeasible to think that DeLauder can jump all of those guys like quickly, especially a Valera, a Noel, a Rodriguez. I think those are all throwaway guys for the most part. Less so Valera, who we'll talk about some injuries coming up. But I could see DeLauder passing them, honestly, very quickly. I really think that the swing is unorthodox. I don't know if it's going to work in the majors. I have doubts. But you want to know what? It's one of those things that, you know, it's going to work until it doesn't. Like, they're not going to change anything, and they shouldn't change anything, honestly. Like, it only changes if it becomes a problem and doesn't work. That's what I would say. Right now it's working. It looks great. He has thrown the ball or hit the ball very well in camp. You know, it's fair to be skeptical about the competition he's facing, which is, again, I talked about this in Lockdown Guardians too, is if you look at Baseball Reference's quality of opposing pitchers and batters face for pitchers on a scale of 1 to 10, with 10 being MLB quality and 1 being, you know, basically you're facing another hitter pitching to you, DeLauder is at a 7.2, which is about double A, which, you know, is about line where his experience is. The line looks good. I mean, he's hitting fly balls. He's impacting the baseball. It's hard hit balls. His at-bats look good. That's all good news. I mean, you know, is he going to struggle with breaking stuff against lefties? I do think so. I think those are both going to be issues for him. High velocity as well. But again, you know, the swing is the swing, and they're not going to change it until he asks them, and it needs to happen if he struggles. So no reason to really change it now. He's playing well. I could see him. You know, I previously said, someone asked me on Twitter when we were sitting in the airport Thursday on the way to Arizona and our flight was delayed. I said, someone asked me if I thought DeLauder would make the roster this year. And I said, no, I don't think so. It's against Cleveland's MO. I think it's very unlikely they do that because it's ahead of the timeline. But he could force their hand. I could see it. I do think he could force their hand. My questions are, if you add DeLauder to the 40 now and he is your everyday right fielder or whatever, you've got to answer questions of what did you do with Brennan? What did you do with Valera? Did he ever come back? You know, you've got to account for Noel and Rodriguez. I don't think those are dudes, Noel and Rodriguez. I'll talk about them in a second. But you've got to at least sit there and say, okay, what are we doing with them on our 40? If DeLauder's lapping them, which I agree, he's definitely more talented than Noel and Rodriguez. I think he's more talented than Valera too, to some extent. They're probably some even, but you have to answer those questions first. And if DeLauder's your guy, you know, guys like Noel and Valera and Rodriguez and even Brennan to an extent are all going to have limited trade value, because if DeLauder is the guy knocking on the door and you want to add him to the 40 and you want to put him in your lineup every day, that has to mean the guys above him are struggling. Because let's be clear, if for some reason Valera comes back healthy and plays well, if it's Rodriguez or Noel, which I doubt it, but let's say they play well and they earn an opportunity and they take advantage of it, DeLauder is not making it. They are not going to sit there and say, like, let's say Will Brennan has a fantastic year in right field and plays some center, and you mix and match some outfielders out there. Just because DeLauder is tearing the cover off the ball in the minor leagues doesn't mean they're going to promote him. They're only going to promote DeLauder if, A, he is playing his you-know-what off, and if the guys above him are struggling. Okay, those two things have to happen in concert for him to make it to the major leagues this year. There is a scenario maybe where some of those guys are playing well and you trade them and you still use DeLauder. I will acknowledge that. But I think a lot of that depends on performance above him. I think it's out of his control to some extent. It depends on what guys in front of him do. And because Cleveland has, in the past, made poor choices in the outfield, Nolan Jones trade, the Will Benson trade, I know some people aren't keen on the idea of hanging on to some of those dudes at the major league level because of the money they make. And I'm still a big Will Brennan believer. I'm going to be honest. I think he can play. I think Cleveland, people talk about how they gave Oscar Gonzalez a chance to play, and when they traded Benson and Jones, I think that trade was a lot about Will Brennan, to be honest with you. I think they love Will Brennan. I've heard they love Will Brennan in the past. So I think they're going to exhaust all their options there. They do not want to make the same mistakes they made before. I think they cleared a path for Brennan to play. And yes, he didn't play well in 2023, and he's got to make up for that. But I think Cleveland is going to. Could I see DeLauder lapping or going ahead of Noel and Rodriguez, and if Valera comes back, even if they're playing well? Yes, only if DeLauder is really playing ahead of them. I think the only guy that really affects DeLauder at the major league level to me is Will Brennan. You know, you've got your Laureanos and you've got your Esteban Florials and whatever. Those guys should not get in the way to me of DeLauder, especially, you know, Laureano being a fourth outfielder guy who can play center and right and plays against lefties. It's about Will Brennan to me with DeLauder. I think they're going to give him every chance to claim the job and see what happens. Again, he could play well and they could trade him. And if DeLauder plays well and he stays down, but, you know, again, you have to answer those questions. If you're forcing DeLauder to the majors this year, if he plays well, you've got to figure out what you're doing with all those other options and why they didn't work out. And if you gave him enough of a chance, because they're not going to have any trade value for the most part if those guys fail. And it's going to be hard to take their success seriously at AAA for the most part. So I think it's very unlikely DeLauder makes it to the majors, but I'm not going to say it's a 0% chance, because if he plays well and the guys in front of them don't, I think they will do it. I do. I think they will. But those things have to happen. It's a complicated answer. So I love Jeff Passan. I think he's a fantastic resource. He is the best MLB reporter for my money out there nationally. I just think it's so unlikely for A, opening day, and B, before July, even with him, especially considering how little time he has in Double A. But we'll see. The other guy that is standing out in camp so far is Angel Martinez. Man, when I was in Goodyear, he was smoking the ball. I mean, pulled shots to right, hitting the ball hard to the opposite field and left field. Fantastic. Did some good stuff hitting right-handed. Just probably the best hitting prospect I've seen there, not named Chase DeLauder. Maybe better than Chase DeLauder, to be honest with you. Made some okay plays at short, better at second. I would say in his time there, we'll see what he can do at short, but he's hitting the ball well. And I think Jesus Ortiz is his name, I want to say, on Twitter. I'm going to look that up real quick before I get in trouble, but I got to go back and look for my tweets through that though. But I know he is in Guardians camp. He was in Goodyear a couple days ago, filling in for Mandy Bell of MLB.com of ClevelandGuardians.com. And he wrote this great story on Angel Martinez, Jesus Cano, not Jesus Ortiz. I'm sorry, Jesus Cano of MLB Pipeline, MLB, about Angel Martinez's mechanical adjustment to try to hit the ball in the air a little more open stance, just being ready to impact the baseball, being upright. And he's done it. His at-bats are good. He's hitting the ball in the air. It's a lot of line drives. It's hard contact. And he's facing, I think on Sunday when he did well against the Cubs, he was facing Kyle Hendricks. I mean, he just has looked really good. And he's not going to start the year on the open day roster, obviously. I think Brian Rocchio is going to. I think he's looked good in the spring training, too. I know the stats won't say it, and be careful how you believe spring training stats. But I like Rocchio's at-bats. I know he doesn't have much to show for, but I think his at-bats have been good. I think he's going to be the bulk of a shortstop time early on. I think Arias still makes the roster, but Rocchio's look good. But, man, Martinez, I dropped him a little in my prospect rankings, and I think other people have too, and I think that might be a mistake. I mean, probably should have given more of a mulligan. We'll see what happens in the regular season with this adjustment, but I was high on him last year, and he had a tough 2023, and now he's made the adjustment. Would not be surprised if he'd have a great year. And honestly, if he has a great year, ends up being a trade candidate. I don't know. Like, that could be somewhere you go, but, we've all been dying for them to trade a middle infielder to address their outfield problems for half a decade now. I mean, well, even longer than that, considering, the last good outfielder they really had was Michael Brantley. It's been, Quan, but, Brantley was more of an impact hitter. So we'll see if that happens. Joey Cantola's first start was really good. I know he pitched really well and he missed some bats. The stuff looked good to me. The curveball was sharp. Excited for that. And we talked about on Lockdown Guardians, Stephen Vogt twice this spring has gone out of his way to talk about how much he has liked Joey Cantola out there, just his demeanor and his presence and his attitude and how he goes about work and the work he's putting in. So they're taking notice of what Cantola is doing. I know he's in the 40-man roster, so obviously they're thinking about him and they get to see him, but they're coming in and he's done a good job and he needs a good year, because last year was his first full healthy year since 2019, his first full healthy year in the Guardians organization. And he needs to be the number six starter. Essentially, if something happens to a starter, they have a doubleheader, he needs to be ready to fill in that role, because he is the most talented healthy starter at AAA at this point. And I guess if they stretch out Ben Lively and Curry, their options, to me, Curry more so than Lively, but they need Cantillo to step up and do what he's doing. The only knock on Cantillo from last year was that in September, I think he kind of got worn down because that was his first full season in a while. And his fastball velocity dipped a little bit late in the year, and some of the stuff did. He pitched in a really tough home ballpark too. So there's that. But he's had a great camp and people are taking notice. The other one I will say, Cade Smith. And I'm going to note Cade Smith, his quality of opponents he's faced are not great, 5.8, which is essentially high A, and Smith was in AAA last year and struck out a lot of dudes, but stuff looks good to me. He's doing what he's supposed to do out there. He's striking guys out. I saw him against the Dodgers, like reserves, and he was throwing 96, 97, Fastball was hard to catch up to. He's throwing that split change that he's got was really good. So, and Cade Smith's got a real opportunity in front of him, right? So is Tim Herron. There's going to be at least two or three spots in this bullpen open because of the injuries to Stephan and Karinchak. That long reliever role seems to be up in the air, even though Curry filled it well last year. It sounds like they want to make Curry a starter option or a long man. So, but I guess, you know, no guarantees of that, which is surprising. I'm surprised Curry's not guaranteed a job for as well as he did last year, but it's a new staff. So we'll see. So I think there's at least two bullpen options open to start the year because there's no chance that Stephan and Karinchak start the year on the open day roster. So Cade Smith's got an opportunity in front of him, and I think he has a chance to at least impact them early on. I really like his stuff. He's gotten better. The other question really is Kyle Manzardo going to make the opening day roster? I've had a lot of people ask me this. I think he's got a better shot than Davis and De Los Santos right now, if I'm being honest. Manzardo has impacted the ball more. His at-bats have been better, which isn't a surprise. He's a better prospect than De Los Santos in terms of his polish and readiness. I just don't know. Stephen Vogt doesn't seem to care about handedness. You know, I think he's comfortable going left-handed heavy. You definitely have to have right-handed options to complement that or at least come off the bench later in the game, which is, you know, Gabriel Arias can't help. And maybe why you keep Tyler Freeman. That's why Ramon Laureano is around. But on the infield, you don't really have the options unless you go to De Los Santos. So that's a question mark. I don't know how he fits on the roster to start the season. I think he is one of the best 26 players in the organization. But again, he's not on the 40-man. What do you do to make a 40-man move? Because I don't think they want to start Espino's clock if you put him on the 60. And maybe Karinchak or Stephan, but one of them has to go on a 60, and they can do it retroactive to, like, whenever they last pitched or the first day you were allowed to use the IL in Karinchak's case because he never pitched. So that could be an option for one of those guys to open up a spot if they do the 60 retroactive for Manzardo, but you still got to revisit the situation anyway, especially with Stephan, who shouldn't be out too long, just not enough to start the opening day. But I'm 50-50 right now. I think Manzardo's looked really good, but I can see Cleveland having a lot of reasons to leave him down, just finding reasons. I don't know. I think he has a better chance than De Los Santos, but I think it's 50-50 at this point, really. And speaking of De Los Santos, really tough at bats when I saw him over the weekend. Just not very selective, not patient, which he never was. And you can't expect him to be, honestly. He's skipping AAA, and he's in Major League camp, and he's 21 years old, and he's facing probably the best competition he's ever seen. It's 7.2 opponent quality, which is equivalent to AA. So he's facing some AAA pitchers. He's facing some Major League pitchers, and the off-speed stuff's killing him. And he's only got two hits, and they're both singles. Or I'm sorry, three hits, but two, they're all singles. And Cleveland got De Los Santos to hit for power. They didn't draft him in the Rule 5 to play, you know, right field or first or DH. To hit singles, they did it to hit power. I know there's a reason to be patient with him because you're not going to get to all of it right away, obviously. But that's what's so hard about this Rule 5 thing and finding a room for him, because it's not fair to judge anybody, especially him, in spring training based off of stats, right? And this short sample you have, because you can't get a good read, basically. But the quality of the bats to me just don't look good. And I don't think it's great for him to sit on the bench in the major leagues and hiding him. It's not going to help his development. He's not going to get the reps he needs. I just have a hard time seeing him stick. If he makes the opening day roster, I don't think it's going to be for long. Hopefully they can work a trade with Arizona to grab his rights, but I don't know what they would do, what they want to do. They have all the leverage in that situation. And defensively, he is very limited. Again, he is just now learning the outfield, so I'm not going to sit here and say he can't play the outfield. He stinks. I saw him take a bad route to a ball on a base hit to right that turned into a double because he just didn't cut it off properly. He didn't hit the right route. And that's not unexpected for being a rookie in right field and never playing there before. And the range at first base was limited too. I saw a couple plays. So it's just so hard to see a fit for him. But there's, you know, 3 weeks of camp left, so we can see what happens. And maybe he'll improve with some reps. I don't know. But from what I saw over the weekend, I see a kid that's got a lot on his plate, being asked a lot of, and I know it's a lot of, you know, Cleveland's saying, oh, no pressure, because this is your chance to make a job, make a camp, and if not, you know, you go back to Arizona and you do what you're going to do anyway, so no pressure on him, but I don't know. He's obviously he wants to make the roster, right? He wants to be in the major leagues and not go to AAA for the Diamondbacks, but I'd have a hard time seeing it work. Other guys I'm having a hard time seeing it work for is Noel and Rodriguez. Saw a lot of them defensively over the weekend. They played one game in Goodyear with Tyler Freeman as the center fielder and Noel in left and Rodriguez in right. And I think I tweeted and I texted my Locked On Guardians co-host Jeff Ellis. Oof, that was quite the outfield. Like Tyler Freeman was the best defensive outfield of the three of them. And he's been playing outfield for all like a week. So that tells you a lot. Rodriguez just, there's no range in right field. A lot of base hits dropping in that probably wouldn't with Will Brennan or Ramon Laureano in right. And the same for Noel in left with Kwan. Obviously, Kwan's a gold glover, so I'm not going to compare Noel to that. But I think even an average left fielder makes some of the plays he makes. And I didn't see a lot of impact from either of them offensively. Noel, a little bit. I saw Noel hit two doubles, but still out in front on a lot of breaking stuff. Just the approach is still so very poor with Noel. And it's not necessarily the strikeouts, but it's just the lack of selectivity and knowing what pitches you should be able to hit and drive. Like he should be more patient. I don't care if he strikes out more. Truthfully, Noel doesn't strike out a whole lot for a power hitter. It's fine. It's the selectivity that's an issue. He does not know which pitches he can drive and which pitches he should not be hitting because he's rolling over on them and hitting weak ground balls. That's been his problem. So, and it hasn't improved. And Rodriguez, he rolls over and everything. I saw just so many ground balls to the left side. He is trying to roll over and everything. He's out in front on everything that's off speed or breaking. He did hit one ball that wrapped around the foul pole. It was a foul ball on Saturday when I was at the game. It was a breaking ball. So he was way out in front of another breaking ball from Seth Lugo, who is with the Royals. He's just out in front on all the breaking stuff. And he lined, like I saw him get a fastball and he lined to right field for a base hit. And I'm like, that's great and all, but Jonathan Rodriguez, when he gets a fastball, he can't be thinking base hit the other way. He's got to be thinking, how do I drive this baseball into the gap or over the outfield wall? That's what he's supposed to be doing. That's what he needs to do to make this roster at some point and show that power. And it just, the approach isn't there for me, and there's no defensive value add. He's got a great arm. I know he's got a great arm. I've seen it. But it's just, you know, I don't like the approach, and I just think breaking stuff is hard for him, and it's not going to get any easier at the major league level. So I don't see those guys. We were talking earlier about DeLauder lapping some guys or coming across some guys and getting to the majors first. It wouldn't shock me if DeLauder beats both these guys in the majors because I don't think they can. I have a lot of doubts about them doing it, and they could both prove me wrong. You know, they can make adjustments and. They could get better with some experience. I just have a hard time believing that they're going to do enough against major league pitching to survive. I've seen some people ask me too on Twitter about Alexi Planez and why he's getting so much playing time. So every day, if you follow me, I tweet out who is on the reserves list every game. Cause I like to see who Cleveland's allowing to come to the major league spring training games and getting some reps in the later gate in the game. I like to see which prospects are throwing out there. Cause that's what I do. And Planez has been on the roster almost every day, I feel like. It's a guy who could come in late in the game as a prospect. I look at it one of two ways. Is that Planez missed almost all year last year. I think he played like a couple of games. He had two injuries that cost him the whole year, basically. So they are trying to make up for lost time on Planez, who I think was a good prospect at one point. I thought he was going to be a five-tool player. I don't know if he's going to ever hit enough, and I don't know if he's going to be able to play center field, but he runs well enough for a corner, and he's got a fantastic arm and huge power. Great, you know, I think he's got really good bat speed for the most part, but he takes big hacks, just a lot of strikeouts. The approach is very poor, so this could be making up for lost time because at some point he'll get reassigned to minor league camp, and he won't be in these games more often than not, or he's in minor league camp, and they'll be playing regulars more often, so there won't be opportunities for him. So it could be just a way of kind of jumpstarting the season for him and getting him some lost reps. Or B, the other one is that, you know, they're doing him a favor by getting him some games and he ends up getting released at the end of spring. They're trying to see what they have in him and they end up releasing him. I feel like this happens to some prospects sometimes. So they get in a lot of major league spring training games, especially towards the end. I know this is early, but I see a lot of prospects who get into games during spring and they end up getting cut. And that's just their way of giving them some time and maybe letting other teams take a look at him and see if they'll claim him. But could be one of those two things. I think it's less likely it's the second one because it's too early in camp for that. That would probably happen more later in camp. I've seen that. So it could be just trying to get him some reps that he lost last year, which he needs. All right. Here's the good stuff, what you came here for. I'm sorry I made you wait a half hour. Hopefully you're still listening. So I saw 2 days of practice on the backfield in Goodyear. Most fun thing I've ever done. And again, it was ground balls. It was fly balls. It was cutoff plays and rundowns and just throwing some, playing some catch. You know, it wasn't anything super exciting, but it was fun to watch. But I could just look at guys moving and see how they look and their physical appearance and just seeing where they're working out at. And the first thing that stood out to me was Rafael Ramirez Jr. Man, that kid's got a good frame. He is 18 years old. He's going to play all year at 18. He was already in the DSL last year or ACL last year. So he should go to Lynchburg at some point this year at age 18. That's great. Just looks the part, man. He looks like a big leaguer, like a big league frame, I should say. He doesn't look like a big leaguer in practice, but physically he looks like he's going to be a big leaguer. It's a big frame. It is. I worry he's going to outgrow shortstop because of his frame. But if he stays there, man, it's exciting to see what he could be like. That's a big kid. Broad shoulders. Just there's room for physical improvement there. Just so smooth. I feel like a shortstop too. Very smooth for the most part. There are a lot of actions to like. I did catch a glimpse of one of the coaches talking to him about messing up a cutoff and other things like that. And there were some funny jokes being thrown around. I don't know if it was a joke, but it was a funny comment anyway. I probably shouldn't repeat it, but it was funny, but he looks the part. I'm really excited to see him in Lynchburg. I like the build and I like if he can stay at shortstop. I'm a little worried about him as a left-handed hitter and against left-handed pitching, especially breaking stuff coming away from him. I think those are going to be concerns, especially when he goes to low A for the first time, but easy to see why you can get excited about him. Watched Alex Clemmy playing catch and throwing to some guys. First of all, Alex Clemmy is huge. Like, I know he's listed like 6'5", 6'6", whatever. On paper, that's one thing to look at. But in person, I mean, he is all arms and legs. He is lanky. He is tall. Big kid, big frame. You have to see him in person to appreciate really how lanky and tall he is and big he is. Nasty stuff. And I'm excited to see it. You know, we'll see if he throws the strikes. But I had some doubts about the pick. But, man, he is big. And he'd be really exciting as a prospect. I'm sure we won't see him. Maybe at all this year. I don't know if we'll see him anywhere outside of the complex. I don't know. Hopefully he gets to Lynchburg at some point so we can watch him on out here. Because I am not going to Arizona in June or July because the weather was perfect here and it can only get worse over the summer. I've been told it gets like up to 100 degrees in the 9 a.m. out there. Brutal. But exciting to see. He is just huge. Looks the part. And then a weird thing happens. So Saturday I'm at the backfield practice and I see Khalil Watson taking reps with the outfielders, just taking some balls out of a machine. And I was like, at first I wasn't sure. I was like, is there somebody else in the roster named Watson I'm not aware of? I'm not sure. I want to make sure before I tweet this. Only guy is Khalil Watson. So he's out there taking balls with the outfielders, just off the machine. And I said, I wouldn't read too much into it because, you know, it's just practice. You never know. But I think a lot of people wouldn't at the time of the Josh Bell trade when Cleveland got Watson was that, you know, there's enough athleticism there to maybe get in center field and do some things and be a potential outfield solution and use that speed and athleticism. And, you know, that's been happening. So it happened in practice. And then unfortunately, Mike Capriese got hurt late in the game Saturday. Hopefully he's okay. Cause it was a very nasty collision with the outfield wall in Goodyear. It was really at a corner in foul territory that would have been devastating that he hit it wrong. Hopefully, luckily he got up and walked up under his own power. But that day, Khalil Watson came in center field to replace Freeze. Connor Cox went to right field. Didn't think it would happen so soon. And Watson played second base the next day in Goodyear against the Giants in a split squad game. So, and I did see him taking practice at second base and shortstop in practice on the backfield as well. So he is still working both. But exciting development. If they put him in the outfield this year, I'd be really excited to see that. The other guy I saw out there, too, was CJ Kafis. Not surprised. He was the guardian, one of the guardians picks last year, who throws left-handed. So the only options for him, obviously, are first base in the outfield. And we already know he plays first. So he was taking reps at the outfielders. Would not be surprised if he goes to Lake County this year and plays some outfield and first base as well. So that's good for him because as you, if you're listening to this, hopefully you know Kapus is a hit over power first baseman. It's not a good profile to have contact over power as a first baseman. So he needs some positional flexibility, take some pressure off the bat. If he never develops power, I think he can develop power. I'm actually banking on him growing into some more power and Cleveland helping him use his lower half. I think that's part of the problem with him is that he does not use his lower half and his swing as much. So I think Cleveland can help him out with that and grow into a little more power. But if he can play the corner outfield as well as first base, that's a big help for him and more to watch. Jose Devers. I really liked Jose Devers last year. I know some people listening to this probably knew that and know about him, but kind of like Rafael Ramirez Jr. He has a bigger frame than I thought. I thought he was kind of tapped out physically for the most part. I think he is, but he is more well-built than I really thought. I really thought he was a very like compact, kind of very set already physically infielder, but there's more to the frame there. And I think he might grow into some more pop. And I don't have any questions about him staying at short. I could see him playing other positions, but I think, like, physically he can – defensively, can he handle short? I think he can. If he can't, he'll move to another position. But I don't think it'll be for physical reasons like Rafael Ramirez Jr. where he might outgrow the position. I don't think Devers is going to outgrow it. It's just a matter of not whether he can actually just do it. And it's not for arm. Kid's got a fantastic arm. So he's really exciting. I'm excited to see him in Lake County this year. Other note I would put out there too is that no DSL guys in camp. So I was obviously looking for the Weldon Franciscas, Jose Perellas, Mason Bolivar, some other dudes that played in the DSL last year. What I found out was that a lot of those guys are playing or doing spring training out in Arizona, out in the Dominican Republic where the Guardians facility is. And they will come over to the States a little bit after camp breaks for the majors and all the minor league affiliates, and they will come over here after that's over. And some of that could be a visa issue, and some of that's just, I don't have a space for all these guys too, right? They have to work out somewhere. There's not enough fields for, you know, 50 DSL guys because they have two teams in the DSL, don't forget. So those guys are all working out over in the Dominican Republic at the Guardians complex, and then once all the guys go to low A and high A and triple A and majors, whatever, they'll come over here and they'll work out with the guys who stay back and extended spring training. So that's why, if you're wondering about where those guys are and why they're not on any rosters and if nobody's seen them practicing, they're over in the Dominican Republic. So there's your update. I got a glimpse of Matt Wilkinson, the tugboat, one of the Guardians draft picks last year, who, you know, stands out for a couple of things. One of them is his size. He is a stocky and bigger young left-handed pitcher who's got a ton of control, who missed a ton of bats in the Cape. But we thought because he played at a very small JUCO and is a bigger frame kid with some weight to him. We looked past him and thought, he's not a draft guy. And the Guardians drafted him because the Cape success and the control. And kudos to them for thinking that, you know, get him in here and, you know, do some training with him and it could take off. He looked good. I watched him play a little bit of catch. He looks like he's in good shape. He's, you know, improving that as well. I'm not one to talk because of my shape, but I'm also not playing baseball. So no one expects me to be in baseball shape. Expect him to be in baseball shape. And I think he's getting there. So that's an exciting development. And we'll end this episode of Guardians of the Future early, but we'll talk about some injury updates. So we haven't had a chance to discuss Valera here. I said this on Locked On Guardians. I'm going to say it again. I think this is a bad spot for Cleveland and Valera. It might be a little premature to say this, but I think it goes with the DeLander talk. It is a bad situation for the Guardians and Valera because he's had one full healthy season. It has been injury after injury. It's been two wrist injuries. This is not his first hamstring issue. He's had an oblique issue. He has only been on the field enough for one full season for the most part, over 400 plate appearances. I think Valera has a good approach. I think he's got 20, 25 home run power. I think he can play a good right field. He's got an arm. He can get on base. He walks. He might have some platoon issues. It might be some strikeout issues, but I think he can be a good, productive right fielder who can play almost every day against any right-hander and maybe pinch hit him against left-handers or sit him, but he can be a very good player in the majors. The talent is there. I think the drive is there. The attitude is there. the injuries just aren't letting him do it. And I think it's a bad situation because this is Cleveland's kind of last year to get a look at him. He has got to be on the field to play. You know, you've got, I don't expect Noel and Rodriguez to impact the roster. Maybe they get a chance if things go bad and they play really well. That would be, you know, good for the organization, good for them if they played really well. But for Valera, like, he should be getting the next shot. Let's say, you know, Florial is Florial. I don't know about him. Let's say Brennan, like I said earlier, let's say Brennan doesn't play well. And, you know, Laureano is kind of a fourth outfielder. He can play center. Maybe plays Straw a little bit less. I don't know. That's a whole other issue. But, you know, let's say some guys in Major League Level don't play well and Valera is playing well in AAA. Boom. He is the first guy to get a shot in the majors because he's right there. He's playing well. The job's open. It's his to run with. And that's what Cleveland wanted. That's what he wanted all this time. That's not going to happen early on because of the hamstring issue. And I don't think you bring in a Florial if you believe in Valera. And obviously they might have done it anyway because they wanted to add to the roster and see if they can diversify their roster and their offense especially. But if you think Valera can impact the club this year, maybe you don't do that. I don't know. But it's a bad time because Cleveland's got to get a clear look at Valera on the field and decide, is this a guy we're going to give an opportunity to? If he plays well, we should do it. Let's see if he runs with it. Let's see what we got. They need to find out it. If they can, this is the last year they can send him back up and down. Now, if he misses significant time, let's say Valera misses like three quarters of the season because this is a scary injury. I don't know how long it'll be. They can apply for a fourth option year. Doesn't mean they're going to get it. And you got to be out a lot. I don't know how much you got to be out, but you got to miss the majority of the season to get that fourth option year. So I would probably bank on that not being the case. I don't know how long he's going to be out for, but this is the last year Cleveland can send him up and down. So that means he's got to get his feet under him for this year. He's got to stay healthy. He's got to perform well. And he's got to hope that guys in front of him aren't, so they can give him a chance. And if he needs to go back up and down, you know, because a lot of guys don't stick at the major league level for the first time. Even Jose Ramirez didn't. And if they can't do that, you go into next spring training and you're like, okay, well, he's got to make the roster. He's out of options. So we either carry him or we don't, and we could lose him. And they've invested a lot of money and time in this guy, and he is, you know, has been a top 100 prospect places. That's a very hard place to be. Again, I know that's looking a year into the future. A lot could happen between now and then. But, you know, DeLauder could be passing him up here real soon, as we talked about earlier. And the worst thing I would hate to see is you get to next spring training, if Valera's out of options, and you think, okay, well, we didn't get a good look at him in 2024 because he was hurt and had a hard time staying on the field, and now we're stuck with him trying to make it in the major league roster, and we're, you know, backs against the wall with this roster spot with him. And you got DeLauder coming, hopefully. Do you trade Valera because he's out of options? So we're just going to trade him because we just, you know, we ran out of options on him and we don't have room for him. And then he goes on to somewhere else and he plays well. And again, this is conjecture, speculation, looking into the future. I would hate to see a guy like, on Locked On Guardians, I compared this to the Gio Urshela, Eric Gonzalez thing. That last, I forget what year it was, but they were both out of options. They were both vying for that utility spot. And Urshela had that hamstring issue in spring training. He got held back a few weeks. And then finally it came time to activate him and they traded him, or they DFA'd him because Gonzalez already made and they just decided they're going to go with that. And it took Urshela some time to stick in the majors. I mean, the Blue Jays DFA'd him. He went to the Yankees DFA'd him, and then they brought him back and then things clicked. And he's been better since. He's had some down years. He's never really recreated that time with the Yankees, but he's been solid enough to, you know, be a semi-regular in the majors and play all over. Good player. But Cleveland gave him chances, to be fair. Cleveland gave Urshela plenty of chances, I think, at least 1 year to play. And it was probably never going to happen here. And Jose Ramirez emerged, so it didn't matter. But I would hate to see the same thing happen for Valera, a guy you've invested a lot of time and money on and has been a top 100 prospect the way Urshela wasn't. And I don't know. The guy just needs to be healthy this year, and he needs to be able to make his debut this year, because it gives them an option to send him up and down and just kind of get a look at him. If he needs to go back down, it's not a big deal, because next year it becomes a big deal. And then you're really stuck in a tough place, both these guys, both Valera and the Guardians. So not a great situation. Finally, if you listen to Locked On Guardians on before this, I'm releasing both episodes on Tuesday, but March 4th. So Monday, March 4th, Daniel Espino was supposed to have a 10-month checkup for his surgically repaired right shoulder, which was May 3rd of last year, on his anterior capsule. He is throwing at 90 feet right now, and the Guardians did not have a game on Monday, March 4th, so there was no, you know, team media there to talk to to vote or anybody about how that checkup went. But Tuesday, Wednesday, someday this week, I imagine someone's going to ask about it because it's in the Guardians notes. So hopefully we get an update this week on where Espino's on track to be right now in terms of his comeback. The Guardians say, you know, late spring, early summer. So we're talking May, June, optimistically. And that might just be getting back on the mound in Arizona and then, you know, building him up, and maybe July he's at an affiliate is my guess. So, but you know, that's all speculation. We'll see how the checkup went. Hopefully it all went well for his sake and the Guardians' sake, because, and all your sakes who's listening to this, because I know if you're a top prospect fan, you want to watch Daniel Espino. I want to watch Daniel Espino. We all do. So hopefully this week we'll get news on that. I'll throw one other thing out here too. I wasn't planning to talk about this, but I ran into someone in Arizona who is developing an app called Player. It's PLYR app. And right now it's only available on Apple, but I think it's coming to Droid, he said, Android soon. But essentially it's going to be NFL Red Zone for Major League Baseball, he's hoping. You plug in your players you want to watch, whether it's just, you know, Mike Trout, Shohei Ohtani, whatever. And you can watch them and you get a notification like, hey, Mike Trout's the plate. Shohei Ohtani's pitching. Notification, turn the game on, boom. And you connect it to your MLB TV app. Or if you're a fantasy player and you want to watch your fantasy guys batting or pitching, you can do the same thing. Put them into your roster, get notifications when your, you know, fantasy hitter is hitting or pitcher is pitching. And he says there's plans to also do this for the minor leagues, for prospects too. I would love that. I'd love to be able to get notifications so I can turn it on when, you know, Alex Clemmie's pitching or Jason Chorio's hitting, whatever. It's in beta right now. I really haven't seen it, truthfully, and we don't know how it works because it's not really connected to any TV yet. All you can do is add people to your roster and keep an eye on that. But I'm excited about that. I keep an eye out for that. I'll talk about it more in here if it becomes a thing. But, you know, might be kind of cool, especially for prospect people if they can do it with MLB TV and ILB TV at that. All right, that's all I got time for today. Thank you for listening to this. If you listen to Locked On Guardians, please subscribe to the next year in Cleveland.substack.com. Don't miss any of the writing. We do, you know, daily prospect reports from spring training. We're doing daily prospect reports when the season starts every single day on prospect performances. I'll continue my scouting reports this week now that I'm back in Ohio and back on a normal schedule. Got draft stuff coming up every day. We're doing a weekly draft 1-1 update where we take a look at the top guys who are in play for the first overall selection for Cleveland and how they did the past weekend. And then myself, Willie Hood, and Jared Zyber will rank where we're at with those guys right now. We'll do that every Tuesday. So look for that coming later today at some point. And, you know, we'll continue these podcasts throughout spring training to see where guys are going. I'm sure I'll do a preview for each level. When I start getting a better idea of who's going to Lake County and who's going to Akron and Columbus, I'll do a podcast on those. And I'll just do a minor league preview on here, and I'll have some kind of guest or have some sort of co-host for then. But until then, thank you for listening, and we'll catch you again real soon.